This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Monday as we welcome you in to Money Moves, VSiN, the sports betting network, SiriusXM channel 158. He's Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Got a heck of a 2 hours on deck for you here. How was your weekend, my friend? What's going on?
Pretty good, pretty busy. We're putting some finishing touches on all the assignments for the College Football Guide. Our bets as contributors and hosts are due tomorrow, so we got to get those in as well. But SEC complete, Mountain West complete, and I think I did a pretty good job. Did a lot of research and a lot of making sure all the T's were crossed and I's were dotted properly. So looking forward to seeing what the final product's going to be here in a couple of weeks.
No doubt about it. And that is a good reminder for me. I saw the email earlier. Do need to finish my write-ups as well. But we'll have a lot of college football on deck today on the show. Our top 25 Money Moves preseason reveal will continue in college football. I've got a couple interesting takes in Call Me Crazy Butt as well on an overreaction Monday. But that's just the tip of the iceberg for all we have to come. Let's set the table like we always do.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
All right, GBT, top items of the day include, of course, the city of brotherly LeBron. Now that the initial shock of the news, LeBron heading to the 76ers has worn off. We've had the weekend to ruminate. We will discuss what we think about the fit as well as the new pecking order in the Eastern Conference when Mike Sielski joins the program, host for WIP in Philly, also a columnist over at the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Yep, we're getting some other news in little bits of moves as well in the NBA now that this logjam is up and that he has his home, so that does matter. Still waiting for the other big shoe to drop, which is the official trade of Kawhi Leonard. But, yeah, with some time to think about what the 76ers team is going to be, maybe we can dive into a little bit more details on what this team is going to look like.
Yeah, in less than a month, they went from 70-1 to win an NBA title down to 20-1. Now 9-1, third in the pecking order currently in the market. And our NFL training camp tour will continue today as well. We're making a stop in the Big Easy to New Orleans. And will Tyler Shuck continue to shuck it like he did the back end of the season? Had a bit of a rocky start, but ended up finishing 4-1 the back end of the year. Can he pick up where he left off? We'll discuss.
Not a cold by nature. Do you like that? As we hit the road and actually hit the sea as we will go over to New Orleans. So looking forward to that and what this is going to be. Got to say, I mean, I kind of came into this thinking, you know, I want to be pessimistic about it, but you can really understand, I'll put it that way, why the market and better subsequently are pretty high on what New Orleans could be this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And plenty of NFL training camp news in addition to our deep dive individual previews. We've got plenty of headlines coming out, including a handful in the NFC West we'll discuss today. But we're actually going to kick things off in golf coming out of the weekend and the 3M Open where Scotty doesn't know how to cash a ticket for Stormy Bonantoni, apparently. But how about Jackson Coyvan, 37-1, holds off Scheffler for his first PGA Tour win by 3 strokes just 24 days after officially going pro. He won a national championship with Auburn 2 months ago, and now he is a tour champion.
Yeah, I know. I was really surprised by his story. It was incredible. And the dominance of which you do it, too, is absolutely incredible, too. So, you know, maybe some thoughts on the 3M Open in terms of making that course still a little bit harder, considering the way it was dominated here by these two golfers and just the golfers in general that were part of this tournament. But great story. And, you know, I would I want to push back on the media, the mainstream media here. Because it was very much presented as he holds off Scottie Scheffler. Yeah, Scottie was down by, what, 3 strokes, 6 strokes heading into the final round and never really made him sweat that much. So I think my man dominated pretty much from wire to wire. It was fantastic. No sweat on that brow.
Scottie was surging. He was still 8 under in the final round. He had a really good day. But there were moments where it looked like maybe he was going to come back. Obviously did not. So kudos to the 21-year-old newbie on tour here. He, by the way, is the youngest American to win a PGA Tour event by multiple shots in 94 years. The last was a 20-year-old Ralph Goodall who won the Arizona Open in 1932. I'm sure you remember that moment well.
It's my joke. You can't do that.
Well, yeah, I have to. That's the way that we do things here. Ends up cashing a check for $1.584 million. But a better at DraftKings apparently ends up getting an even bigger payout than the winner of the tournament because he put more than $100K on him to win at 37-1, cash more than $4 million.
Good for him.
Why didn't anyone give me the heads up?
I was going to say, not me, though. How about that? Not me at all. So good for him. Good payout. You always like to see these, and I hope that they're going to use that money for good.
I'm sure they will. I do want to take a second, though, to listen to what Jackson Coyvan had to say after the round, because especially as we have the conversation about what we know Scotty has been able to do in some of these late rounds and could he continue to make a push, Jackson was certainly feeling it there for a moment.
definitely had some nerves coming down on 18, but, you know, all throughout the crowd, I kept hearing Scotty's coming. And I just tried to tone that out and keep playing the golf I knew I could, and was able to find some good putts coming down the stretch. I mean, I just love this game. I love golf. It's everything I do. I have a tough time getting away from it, but like I said, it's been love at first sight. And just want to say thanks to my parents for helping me get into this and supporting me throughout the entire journey.
Is it fair to say this is just the beginning?
Yes, ma'am.
Just the beginning. Dominance, trust, confidence, Jim Nantz.
You know, she used the word dominance there. You said it as well. That's actually, as part of the interview, he said that's written on his glove. That's one of his buzzwords.
I'm laughing because I watched this whole interview here, and because he says at one point, I came up with the word dominance at one point. I'm like, well, he didn't come up with it. But, yeah. And I'll say to my point about, you know, Scotty never really having a shot. After Coivin came out and birdied the first hole, his probability, according to Data Golf, went all the way up to 66.7%. Yeah. And so this was one where you're probably sweating just because, you know, you hear the things, you know what Scottie Scheffler is, but you kind of had the feeling as he was going on that it was just, you know, a little too late or not enough and a little too late from Scheffler, just considering the way this kid had been playing. And sure enough, I mean, by the time you get to through nine, his win probability had spiked all the way to 87% and was going to cruise the rest of the way.
I was somebody who played Scheffler outright, also had him top five, so at least we get that one for what is his fifth runner-up now of the season, which is tied for the most runner-up finishes we've seen in a single PGA Tour year since 2000. He also finished third twice, fourth twice, just one win, of course, since his 2026 debut at the American Express. Okay, let's continue talking about some young guns here, because how about the day from Jacob Mizorowski yesterday? Sets a franchise record, strikes out the first seven batters against the Rockies on Sunday, finishes the day with 12 of his first 13. Are you kidding me? And it was like every pitch was 103.
I think almost every single one was, right? So that's going to be, look, we've talked about this, and remember too, for those who don't remember, they had spaced his start out. It was 6 days between because they wanted to get him a little bit more rest, and it seemed like that was the case. Mm-hmm. He, I think, even said afterward that the legs felt a lot better, so you're not too worried about that. Obviously, the takeaway now is, with a dominant performance like that, is this new strategy, and if it's going to continue, of spacing his starts out, because he also still only pitched five innings, right? Mm-hmm. Less than 90 pitches as well. Is that limited workload that he is going to undertake? Stretched out starts and fewer pitches and innings. But if he's still dominating to this stretch, even in those shorter outcomes and in those longer rest periods, is that going to be enough for him to win this thing? Because he's still well under $3 right now. He's minus 260 when I looked to win the National League Cy Young.
$3 DraftKings right now.
Okay, so at FanDuel, you can find minus 260. And we brought this up last week. There's two paths you could take. It's, all right, let's start hunting for prices. But or now, since this market has dipped, is it actually time to really think about laying 260 with Jacob Mizorowski? Because he is still going to do just enough to win this thing. I mean, 12 of 13 sitting them down is absolute wild behavior.
And I do have the exact numbers on the speed. Reached 100 on 66 of the 83 pitches, which was another record. 33 fastballs of at least 103, which is more than twice the number of anyone else in a single game since tracking began, and hit a top velocity of 104.7. To your point, though, about the odds board, Zach Wheeler plus 750, Christopher Sanchez plus 850, Chris Sale 9-1, Chase Burns on the hill today. He's a 20-1 shot if you're looking to get ahead of a number, perhaps. But a lot of big payouts available if you don't think that either what he's doing is sustainable, or to your point, maybe just the workload changes so much that it creates value on someone else.
Yeah, I mean, well, and Wheeler's on the hill today too, so that's going to be a big one to monitor, because he has been, as we have talked about a lot and everybody on the network has, in really dominant form, and he gets to face the Marlins, so one would assume, I know Justin likes him to, Justin, I'm not putting words in your mouth, our producer likes him to lead today in strikeouts, right? So you could, and he's up there to do it at plus 325, so if he pulls that off, the resume's only going to get more impressive for Wheeler as well. And he seems to be the legitimate contender. You know, it's going through some of these names that you're looking at for the NL Cy Young. You mentioned a couple of the ones at the top. You know, Sale had a good day against your Padres on Thursday last week. Three earned runs, struck out 11, only walked one. Yamamoto on Saturday gave him six innings, gave up one earned run. Not the sexiest numbers, but still six with one earned run, and continues to be very consistent. That was on the road against the New York Mets. And I think Christopher Sanchez has all but eliminated himself from contention here. Pretty average outing on Saturday. Gave him six innings, three earned runs, six strikeouts, to three walks, and 101 pitches versus the Yankees. I mean, very clearly at this point, Sanchez's resume is behind Wheeler's. So I don't know if he's eliminated himself from contention, or at the very least, you're not looking at him ahead of a Wheeler as long as Wheeler's continuing to do this. So I feel like we're coming down to a two-horse race, but one of those horses still has a very strong lead.
Yeah. Just pick picked up the poly market numbers as well. Jacob Mizorowski sitting 75% right now. This market's got more than $1 million in liquidity in it, too. So there is a lot of bets that have come in on this. And to your point about my Padres, yes, I know that they've been struggling. Did sweep the Marlins this past weekend, although who hasn't?
You know, it's funny. I put that in my notes, and I was like, I know Stormy's going to, like, take this personal or something like that. Like, I just have to state the facts.
I'm just very offended.
You're not going to like coming up here in a little bit when I ask our guest coming up, should they or will they sell here and just get rid of everybody because they're absolutely terrible? And the answer should be yes.
That is a good tease, though, for coming up in about 25 minutes. Baseball writer John Parrotto is going to join the program. So, yes, a lot of trade deadline questions, including, of course, the biggest question in Tarek Skubal and what's ultimately going to happen with him as the Tigers just dropped two more games against the Royals over the weekend. So that, I mean, this week from that standpoint with what Detroit is ultimately going to do, whether it's pulling the trigger on sending him away and just accepting your fate, or if you still want to push 50-56, looking ahead to the back half of the season, it is not a great spot to be in right now.
No, it's not. And we also have a big baseball game coming up here in about 20 minutes. Rangers, Mariners.
You got anything?
I do, actually. It's not starting for another couple of minutes. We can hit this on the other side. But Mariners, snappy four-game losing streak. They've not been playing well. 5-10 in their last 15 games. If they lose this, they will drop 3-4 to the Texas Rangers in a big set for Texas, for those who don't remember. Got a lot of futures on the Texas Rangers, so would very much like them to take the series. Don't know if they will today.
Okay, well, let's hear your full thoughts when we come back. Also, like I said, lots of NFL training camp news to get to by tomorrow. Officially, all 32 teams will have had veterans reporting, so we'll get into it all when we return. Just getting started here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Money Moves, Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. We do have a little day baseball that's going to get underway in about 20 minutes or so, JVT. And you mentioned it briefly before we hit the break. The Mariners and Rangers going head-to-head here for the finale of a four-game set. Seattle won yesterday after dropping the first two, looking for a split here today, and are favored to do so on the road with George Kirby on the hill against Kumar Rocker.
Yep, last start for Kirby at home against the Cincinnati Reds. Had pitched well, three hits over six innings, six strikeouts, one walk. He's pitched at least six innings in six straight starts, so you can look at total runs or some total outs if you wanted to. Heavily priced, though, to over 17.5, like minus 210. The expectation he's going to be out there for a while. He's pitched well on the road, too. 3.14 ERA, 2.82 fielding independent away from home, and his last four in general, sub-2 ERA, 3.97 expected, so maybe a little bit of hard contact, give it up there, but Kirby's in pretty good form is the whole point. Kumar Rocker on the other side, though, getting the start, has not pitched well at home, and this is kind of leading to, I'll sweat this out while we're on the air together, home split, 61 innings pitched, a 4.43 ERA compared to a 3.60 on the road, 4.70 fielding independent out there in Arlington. Would expect that maybe that continues. Over 2.5 earned runs through Kumar Walker at plus 110 was the play for me today.
Okay, beautiful. Love a live sweat on the air when we can get them. We don't all the time, and this is kind of the time of year where we're going to need them, right?
Yes, I would hope. And so the hope is that Kumar Walker gives up 3 earned runs, but then George Kirby gives up 4, and then the Rangers can win the game. So I would really like that.
So your future can still be looking better.
One-and-a-half game lead, though, in the AL West.
From the Mariners to the Marlins real quickly, their losing streak out to 12 straight now. Franchise record-setting skid. And I wanted to bring this up because I thought this was absolutely fascinating. Not only are they on a 12-game skid, but their minor league AAA club is also on a 12-game skid right now. The Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp also can't win a game to save their life. As a minor league guy, I figured you would enjoy that.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy these leagues, or excuse me, the logos that some of these teams have. And Aviators baseball is something you got to keep track of as being part of the local market, but do not put that evil on me of me enjoying minor league baseball.
Well, the Marlins, the real ones, are dogs again today with Tyler Phillips at home taking on, as we mentioned earlier, the aforementioned Zach Wheeler and the Phillies, who are around $2 favorites going into this one. But okay, from baseball to the National Football League, the preseason's just a couple weeks away. Do want to remind you, it's your last chance to lock in some early bird pricing on our football special, just $175 right now. The price does go up next week, so now is the time. As a part of being a full VSiN Pro subscriber, you get access to our NFL betting guide that's got all your favorite VSiN show hosts and analysts, futures plays, win totals, division races, and so much more. Then August 3rd, the college football betting guide is also coming out with previews of every conference, all 138 FBS teams, power ratings, everything you need. It's a one-stop shop. VSiN.com/subscribe right now. By tomorrow for the NFL, all vets will have officially reported to their respective training camps. And we've got lots of news in the NFC West over the weekend, including a contract finally done for a starting quarterback in the division. Jacoby Brissett gets the deal done. $15.5 million guaranteed on the reworked deal. $21 million with incentives. No New Year's added to the deal, so he's still going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season, which that to me is, I don't know why this took so long. If you weren't negotiating term, why didn't you just give the guy a little bit more money? He's a starting quarterback in this league. It's a one-year thing. You can't. I get it from Jacoby's perspective, right? If I'm supposed to be your starting quarterback, I need to be able to, like, hold my head high and feel a little bit respectable with my salary, no?
I guess to an extent. Look, nobody's going to be a bigger Brissett fan than I am. A former Indianapolis Colts starting quarterback pulled us out of the dark times. Was the starting quarterback for the Colts the year that Andrew Luck decided to retire. So I do enjoy Jacoby Brissett. Having said that, I would have said see you later. I mean, like, in all seriousness, what is your goal as a team if you're the Arizona Cardinals? Your goal is development and trying to see what you have on this roster. That's my favorite phrase. Down the stretch of the season from week 14 on, he was mundane, constantly putting the ball in danger, had committed quite a few turnover-worthy plays, really was, you look at it, well under 7 yards per attempt over the last 5 games of the regular season. Just don't understand what you really want here if you're looking at the Arizona Cardinals. And as I have stated, potential rookie of the year on the roster in Carson Beck. I'm tired of this nonsense. Seriously, if you're a team like the Cardinals.
It's just a bridge to give him an opportunity to learn a little bit. That's what it is.
You and I argued about this last day. Like, when is LaFleur going to walk into this building during the next 7 months and going like, oh, wait, hey, Carson, you look a little different. Let's just see what you got this week. You look ready, buddy.
No, it's not about that. It's about the team around him.
Well, that's what I mean, though. But, like, who cares? What your goal here is development. What if Carson Beck's going to be good? We know what Jacoby Brissett is, and I'm sorry if somebody ever tells me again that Gardner Minshew should try. Like, no, we're done. We know exactly what this is. I think that because I'm more of like the mentality of you can kill two birds with one stone. You could try to develop Beck while also potentially being one of the teams that's going to pick to the top of the draft if you so choose to replace him if he's not really that good. I just don't get the desire to give money and starting time to a guy like Jacoby Brissett, where I will ask you this, the perfect season for the Arizona Cardinals, if it's the perfect season from Jacoby Brissett, what is your ultimate outcome? What are we really talking about?
No, it's fair.
6-7 wins?
Probably.
And that's like the ultimate, everything went right for us, and Brissett was the best version of himself?
Sure.
You know?
Well, I think, to your point on paying him, but again, it's like $15 million is a drop in the bucket. It's not a bit.
Oh, I don't care about the money.
He was entering the season making 5.5.
I don't care about the money. I'm talking about the role. Like, I would just say, see you, man.
I think this is going to be just like the situation last year in New Orleans. Like, we're going to see Carson Beck just like we saw Tyler Shuck. He's probably going to finish high in Offensive Rookie of the Year voting if he ends up actually performing well as a quarterback, not going to win it. That's said. We'll talk about the Saints a little bit later. But the Cardinals expected to be the worst team in the league this year. Lowest win total at 3.5. You are getting juiced to the over, though. So, like, the expectation is that they can get to 4. They're a 100-1 shot in the division. Longest shot for the Super Bowl. Shortest shot for fewest wins. So those are the expectations. Let's go from worst to first, though, in the National Football League. In terms of your favorite, the Super Bowl favorites as well in the Los Angeles Rams. Head coach Sean McVay said Aaron Donald is, quote, putting his body through rigorous tests right now on his own to see if he feels like he can handle what an NFL season would bring. Added that he feels like if his body could handle it, there's a very real opportunity he comes back and plays opposite on that defensive line with reigning defensive player of the year, Myles Garrett. I feel like with the LeBron saga in the background now, this is the new, when are we going to get the confirmation one way or another? If he does ultimately come back and play for the Rams, does that move the needle from an odds perspective, or is that just already assumed that he's going to be there?
No, I mean, so how many years has he been off?
Two,
right? I just wonder. So first off, to answer your question, maybe there's like a small change in the odds just because teams, people will be like, hey, Aaron Donald's back. Let's bet the Rams and thus, you know, stave off some of the liability that you might get. But in terms of the true probability that he adds to this team, it is a massive question. After a lot of time off, what exactly does he provide? We know what he was. But you, I don't think it is safe to assume that he will be what he was.
He's, what, 35 years old
yeah,
now?
Yeah, when he comes back. And maybe the role, and here's the other part. Maybe the role is just going to be smaller. Let's say, let's assume he comes back. Why are we assuming that he's going to be the guy that was playing every single snap and being the same? What if he's coming back for the sole purpose of getting his body right and ready for a potential postseason run, and he's not going to have the same regular season impact? Snap counts, you know, limits on how often he's going to play, rotational spot, things like that, because he has been off for so long.
I would assume if he came back, wouldn't it be kind of like a Von Miller slow roll where, start isn't like an impact really play at the beginning of the season, but then once you get closer to the postseason, like really draw him in and see what that looks like. From an odd standpoint, to win the Super Bowl, they're plus 550. Buffalo and Baltimore are your second shot at 10-1, so it is a bit of a jump from an odds perspective of what people think about Los Angeles compared to the rest of the league right now, plus 295 in the NFC, and an even money favorite to win the NFC West above your reigning Super Bowl champs in the Seattle Seahawks. And a 49ers team that people are pretty optimistic about, win total at 9.5, an expectation that people are that the 49ers will have double digit wins again, although they don't have a head coach at training camp right now. This story about Kyle Shanahan is crazy. All of the injuries he apparently sustained, not coaching right now at camp with a severe concussion, has to get cleared, so Chris Forster is taking over in the meantime, but broke his nose, his hand, three ribs, needed 40 stitches on his face from this car accident, and nobody knew about it.
Yeah, there's a lot there, at least in terms of the information and nobody really knowing about it for a long time. But that's another story for another day. I mean,
for another program.
Yeah, I think for the whole point here, I think, is just they'll be fine. He'll come back at some point. He'll be able to coach. I think that as long as, because he has been there for so long, pretty much everything's in place. I think everybody knows how to take care of themselves. They're adults. The staff knows what they're going to do here. So I'm not really too worried about them from a training camp or preparation standpoint. I think the bigger, I guess, news to an extent, if we're talking about just purely football, was obviously Nick Bosa.
Dude, see some of those videos?
In a very good mood after a certain firing at ESPN, has now looked very, very healthy and very, very spry coming off of this knee injury.
How long had it been since Bosa actually posted on social media?
It had been a while.
And then that's when he posts, so there you go. But I will say, from a football standpoint, dude looks great. Trent Williams, this quote from him, "I can't tell he had an injury and came back from anything. Most people with an injury that catastrophic, you can see something like atrophy in the leg. Bosa looks better than he did before he got hurt." Those are the things we like to hear entering the season.
I mean, would you hear anything else from a teammate? Got to tell you guys, leg looks cooked. Of course not.
No, but you would see people like, listen, like he's easing back in. He looks awesome.
Yeah.
And I know you are down on my team.
Yeah, well, but when they eventually trade for Max Crosby and he and Bosa together will be a very formidable tandem.
Is that something that I'm missing here?
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, like, that's like the team that is potentially going to go get Crosby here before the season starts.
You think that'll actually happen?
I think it is more likely than most assume it to be.
Interesting. Yeah. I've kind of shot that down pretty early. We have this episode here on Money Moves. When we come back to the MLB, we go. Baseball writer John Parrotto joining us next to talk MLB trade deadline.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Money Moves, the MLB trade deadline a week from today, and trades are already beginning. We've seen a handful of recent injuries as well that could impact how things play out. To help us talk it all over, excited to welcome in baseball writer John Parrotto on the Progressive Guest Line. You can find his work with the AP, FanSided, MLB.com, USA Today, Baseball Digest. You're a busy man, John. Welcome in. Thanks for doing this.
I am a busy man. I feel like one of those utility players. I can go wherever and play any position, but thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate you stepping in for another role today and helping us out. And no secret, of course, that the big name that everybody's been talking about for more than a month now is Tarek Skubal and what the Detroit Tigers ultimately are going to do. They end up dropping another couple games over the weekend. Where do you currently sit on this, and how important of a decision week is this for Detroit?
Well, I know the Tigers would love to keep him. In a perfect world, you know, they would win some games, get closer in the race. But to me, I just don't see them as a playoff team. And I think they can't just let him walk without at least having a legitimate shot at the playoffs and getting nothing but a draft pick next year for him. And it's going to be interesting. I really think, Stormy, this is going to go down to the wire, right down to August 3rd. The Tigers are going to wait as long as they can and see on two fronts. One, whether they can legitimately be a playoff team, and two, what kind of offers they can get in a bidding war from different teams for him. So, you know, it really, and I hate to be wishy-washy, but at this point it's 50-50. But if I were to predict, I think he's going to be traded. I just don't see the Tigers making a push.
So, John, who do you think would be in contention for then acquiring Tarek Skubal?
Well, you know, the great thing about that, John, is he's got, you know, he's only got 2 months left. You know, he has a big salary, obviously, but it's only 2 months. So just even the small market teams can afford to absorb 2 months of Skubal's contract. I think the Braves stand at the top of my list. They really need another starting pitcher if they're going to hold off the Phillies and win the National League East. I mean, just the Dodgers, they have so many pitching injuries, they certainly could use him. A small market team that to keep an eye on are the Brewers. The Brewers are hurting pitching-wise. You know, they have a decent-sized lead in the National League Central, but they are tired of going out in the playoffs. They, you know, they've been there 7 of the last 8 years, and they want to win it all this year. And another team is the Cubs. I mean, the Cubs are good enough as they are to get to the playoffs, but I just don't think that they have that strong starting pitching to where once you get in a short series that they can go very far. And if you had a guy like Skubal, then the Cubs are a legitimate World Series team with him.
So is Skubal, assuming we go down this path, this thought experiment where he is gone, what else does that mean for Detroit? I think you wrote up Casey Mize as well could potentially be out there. Like, what other arms pieces could they be selling off if they indeed decide to go in that direction?
I think Casey Mize, he's going to be free agent at the end of the year. And I think the Tigers have just, even though it took him a long time to live up to that billing as the first pick in the 2019 draft, and he had a really good year last year, and he's pitched better than his record this year. But he's been hurt a lot in his career. He's been inconsistent. And I don't think the Tigers see him as a long-term piece anymore, part of their puzzle. So I think he could be traded. And I think another guy is Gleyber Torres because, he can play. He's been a second baseman here the last few years, but he has experience at shortstop, and you can play him at third. And, you know, he can still hit. He hasn't hit for power the last couple of years, but his on-base percentage this year is almost .400. So, I mean, he definitely has offensive value.
The Red Sox have certainly been on a surge the last month or so. They're 4 games over .500 now, a game and a half clear in the wild card hunt. We saw them bring in that right-handed bat and Curtis Meade from the Nationals over the weekend, but they've said that they really wanted to be aggressive here at the deadline. How much more should we expect from Boston?
Like basically every team need another reliever. I think they're okay starting wise. I don't know if they necessarily need to add a starting pitcher, certainly not a number one type starter, maybe a mid to late rotation guy. It's amazing. I mean, a month ago, you know, everyone was speculating, including me, who they're going to trade. Sonny Gray, for sure. Their oldest Chapman seemed certain that he was going to leave. And now that they've gone from being about a week or less from a teardown to all of a sudden trying to get into the playoffs, and they've got a decent shot, especially if they make the right moves here in the next few days.
All right, Stormy's not going to like this.
No.
But some of the high-end closers, bullpen arms that are available, Padres have some pretty interesting names, a name. What are some of the big high-leverage arms that are going to be available here at the deadline potentially?
Well, Mason Miller obviously is the one that comes to mind, even though the Padres have kind of scrapped their way back into contention by finally hitting for the first time all year. But, you know, A.J. Preller always does the unorthodox, and if he can get a bundle from Miller, then I think he'll let him go. That's the main guy on the Padres to me. They have a couple other relievers. One that comes to mind is Adrian Morahone, who is a good lefty and somebody you could get something good back for him. But it seems right now that, you know, Mason Miller's the guy in play for San Diego. And like I said, A.J. Preller, he pulled a stunner to get Miller last year at the deadline, giving up Leo DeVries, who was the number three prospect in all baseball at that point, and three other prospects for Miller. So, you know, he's liable to do anything, and he's one of the more interesting the GMs in the major leagues, and sometimes he's very hard to read. So the Padres can go in a lot of different directions here that maybe we don't even foresee at the moment.
Great start to the season, but boy, if they crash and burn. I personally, as a Padres fan, was hoping that this sweep of the Marlins would really catapult them into the next portion of the season, but I don't think that those dreams are going to come to reality. What about C.J. Abrams? What do you think ultimately ends up happening with him?
You know, Washington's in a tricky situation. I mean, they're not out of the race. I mean, they got some ground to make up if they're going to get to the playoffs. You know, they've exceeded all expectations, including, I would say, internally. I don't think they expected to contend this year in Paul Toboni's first year as the general manager. Abrams, I mean, you know, he's under contract for a couple more years. And, you know, in a way, if you're Washington, you're thinking, wow, we can build around him and James Wood. But I think Washington realizes they're really a couple of years away from being seriously a good team. And I do think they know Abrams could get a lot of talent back in return, a lot of young talent, because, you know, he's been a good player pretty much ever since he came to the big leagues, but he's really broken out this year. And I mean, he's learned, he's quit chasing so many bad pitches, and it's translated. He's got 25 homers and like 75 to 80 RBIs, somewhere in that range. And you can get a lot for a guy like that. But because he has 2 years after this year, if they don't get the right deal now at the deadline, I can see them holding on to him and waiting and trying to get in the winter when they could think they would get more for him.
Do you think, John, there might be any unexpected buyers here at the deadline? I know you mentioned small market and you brought up Milwaukee, but I was thinking more of maybe some of these NL teams on the fringes of this really bad wild card race, St. Louis, Miami, Pittsburgh. Could any of those teams be a surprise buyer for any of these big names?
I think St. Louis will buy to an extent. I don't think they'll be big buyers because they're pretty much committed to giving these younger guys a chance to really prove themselves. And, you know, I think if they could get a couple of rentals without giving up much in prospect capital, then they would do it. I mean, they certainly need more pitching. They need another starting pitcher. And I think Pittsburgh, if they stay close and are only a game out right now and for the third wild card, I think they'll make some moves. I don't think they'll make drastic, like, big money moves, but I do think that they will be in on a lot of guys. I know they would love to get Mason Miller from San Diego. They need a closer badly. Miller's a kid. He's a Pittsburgh kid. He grew up in the suburbs in Bethel Park, grew up a Pirate fan. And I know he would love talking to him over the years, how much he would love to come here and play in Pittsburgh where I'm based someday. They definitely need relief pitching badly. I think they could use a mid-rotation starter to eat up innings. And I like their offense the way it is. I don't know if they necessarily need to trade for a hitter, but they definitely – I just think the way they're constituted now is their pitching staff's not quite good enough to get there, which is odd because coming into the season, the big question was, would they have enough hitting to get to the playoffs because the pitching was so good, but a number of their pitchers have not lived up to expectations this year.
John, thank you so much for the breakdown. We appreciate it. And don't work too hard this week, okay?
I'll try not to. Hey, thanks for having me. I really enjoy talking with you.
You're awesome. John Parrotto, everybody, doing a great job covering Major League Baseball all over the place. Like we said, again, the AP fan-sided has a tremendous breakdown right now of the 20 biggest MLB trade deadline candidates up at fan-sided. But Baseball Digest, MLB.com, USA Today, he's all over the place right now. You can also follow him on X at Jay Parrotto. You just had to ask him, didn't you?
John to John. Yes, I had to ask him about the most important reliever potentially on the market.
But you didn't even set it up that way.
What do you mean? I said you're just going to hate it. And then what are some of the big-name relievers that are going to be available?
Miller, we're going to miss you so much, bud.
We are underway, by the way, between Texas and Seattle. So we are watching this. For those who don't remember, Kumar Rocker over 2.5 earned runs will be the watch here today.
All right, we got to step aside here real quickly. It is an overreaction Monday when we return.
Oh, my gosh. One of the most ridiculous prompts I've ever seen.
We got a couple strong opinions for Call Me Crazy, but one of which JVT specifically wanted to write.
It was so ludicrous that Stormy's already leaking confidence in the tape before the show starts.
You're insane. You're so dramatic. We'll be right back.
on your tinfoil hats.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
The whole world gone crazy.
For Call Me Crazy, but...
Let's get into it on an Overreaction Monday. Stormy Bonatoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Call me crazy, but... So I thought you were going to agree with this.
You see what I mean? You're leaking confidence already.
I'm very disappointed. I thought maybe we were going to have something good here, but we are again at odds.
Actually, hearing you now, I'm even more disappointed that you're trying to get layups in this segment by putting stuff in that you would think I would agree with.
No, because... So listen, here's the call me crazy, but New Mexico... can absolutely make the college football playoff this year. The odds are 20-1. Shop around, because I saw as low as 13-1 at DraftKings, but BetMGM and some others have 20-1. Where this comes from, where I started like wanting to read up more on New Mexico, was because of our conversation about Oklahoma last week when we were previewing the SEC, and I skipped New Mexico when I was talking about the difficulty of their schedule. And you're like, whoa, they're one of the favorites in the Mountain West. So I was like, okay, let me do a little bit more research here. And I do like a lot of what they have coming back, the most returning production in the league at this point, including their quarterback, Jack Lane, who, yes, I know, had an elbow injury, but I'm hoping it's like...
kind of glossing over.
I'm hoping it's like rookie of the year elbow, right? He comes back and he's just slinging it. However, it appears at least he is fully available and back. They're still going to slow play him a little bit during fall camp, but the expectation is that he's good to go. Jason Eck as well, back for year two after a surprising 9-3 season. So they exceeded expectations year one. Why not build on it? His son Jackson was the Mountain West co-defensive player of the year. He's back to help lead that unit. And looking at the schedule, this was what really sold me, was it feels pretty manageable. Oklahoma, like I mentioned, they're in non-con week three. You have to a tough road trip, obviously, going to Hawaii, but you get all the other good teams in the league at home. You host UNLV, who you beat in Vegas last year, host Air Force, who you beat in Colorado Springs last year, and you host newcomer North Dakota State as well. Those are potential marquee wins in the conference that I think there is absolutely a world in which they could be an 11-1, 10-2 team and contend for a CFP spot.
This is going to be some of my best work here.
Go for it.
Let me limber up
Go
really quick.
Go for it.
All right, first off, I do think you're underselling Lane's injury just a bit, but to work against my own point, in the transfer portal, they went and got Luke Moga, who is an Oregon transfer, who, if, and by the way, by all accounts, dazzled in spring. So if he comes in and has to fill in for Lane, I feel relatively confident they'll be okay. I also don't even think Lane was particularly great. 2,400 yards, 13 touchdowns and 10 interceptions, only 7.6 yards per attempt. So it might actually work if Moga comes in, if he offers a little bit more. So I think that's kind of a moot point. To me, there's a couple of things. First off, defensively, are they going to be any better? This is one of my burning questions for New Mexico and the College Football Guide. You could talk about, by the way, a ridiculous name, Jackson Eck, who is coming back, the preseason defensive player of the year. But if you look under the hood a little bit, you're talking about a team 19th percentile in non-explosive EPA per play, 36th percentile in late down success rate. So they weren't great down to down. They weren't really great on late downs. How is that going to translate this year when you're bringing a lot of that back? Do you assume that it's going to be better, or do you assume a pretty even stretch in terms of production that you're going to be the same from year to year? And the last bit for this is, with the expectations now, New Mexico a season to go. They closed as a favorite six times. They only won three of those games. They covered one of them. So 3-3 straight up, 1-5 against the spread as a favorite last year. They were much better in that underdog role, and it's just much better in general when you're coming in brand new roster, brand new head coach, bunch of new personnel, and taking a league by storm when they're not used to you. This is going to be a completely different ask for New Mexico in a league with a bunch of teams that are around the same. And the last point here is, I think it would be a great point for a lot of these teams if they were to play host to all of these squads that you're talking about, if you had a home field that was worth writing home about.
Whoa!
Nobody goes to Albuquerque. Not even residents of Albuquerque go to New Mexico football games. And I think that's also something that is going to work against them. Just because you get to play host doesn't really mean it means anything for
Everyone's
one of the weakest home fields in the country.
Woof, woof, woof.
There you go.
But here, I want just one final note on this. I think more than anything else, given the value of this at 20-1, it's worthwhile to take a shot, considering I am somebody who thinks that G6 spot in the CFP is relatively wide open. When you look at the odds, Boise State is +450, Navy's +750, UNLV, who New Mexico is a co-favorite with in the conference, is 10-1. So at 20-1, I think that is absolutely reasonable and realistic that that could happen. The G6 spot is a lot more open than people are giving it credit for right now.
I come from the mindset of, I think the Mountain West in general is just going to cannibalize itself, because I think all five of these teams are all around the same thing.
Speaking of, what do you think about North Dakota State alt under 8.5?
I'd be down with it.
I think so, too. Yeah. Plus 140, plus 150.
You know, and you actually, because I throw my burning questions at you, one of the ones that you liked that you thought was unique, the way that I put it was, you know, is the lack of talent in that transfer portal going to burn them? You know, North Dakota State, they did not hit the transfer portal. One of their three power four transfers was a freaking punter. So, like, they're really banking on these internally homegrown guys to step up in a level of competition that I don't know if they're going to be ready for.
Okay, hit me with yours.
All right, so I got a couple.
Even though that was kind of one of yours, too.
Yeah. Well,
opposing me.
They're all going to be college football related because that's kind of on the brain at this point right now for me, considering we just got done with the college football betting guide. But for the first one, we'll go to the SEC. Auburn is going to be a problem in the Southeastern Conference. This means that over 6.5, I think, is definitely worth looking at. But as I came out of it, and I'm somebody that likes to, when presented with information, change his opinion if I had one or the other. And I didn't really think anything. My mind was a blank slate when it came to Auburn for the most part. But I think you come out of that looking really, really good. Obviously, you're pretty much bringing USF into a brand new uniform if you're the Tigers. But Byron Brown was absolutely fantastic. You know, when it was one of those things where you know somebody is good, and then you put the numbers together and you don't really realize how dominant he was. Over 4,200 yards, both passing and rushing, and 42 total touchdowns last year for Brown. Like, he was really, really solid. And then you like some of the production they bring in from USF to help him. Jeremiah Koger comes in, 38 receptions, 597 yards last year for the Bulls. Keyshawn Singleton, 50 receptions, 877 yards. So you got two primary pass catchers that are really going to help that transition for this offense, along with Brown as well. I think there's a lot to like. And you brought up a really great point, so I stole your point for one of my burning questions for Auburn, because I thought it was really good.
DJ Durkin?
How much does retaining DJ Durkin a defensive coordinator help was my question, and I think it helps a ton. There's some good roster continuity for this defense, so you get that aspect of, and a lot of people might look at this and go, well, how's a Bulls team going to fare in the SEC, which I sarcastically mentioned in the write-up, but defensively, this is an SEC team, and it is run by a coordinator who's done a really good job. I think over 6.5 wins, totally worth it. Call me crazy, but this team's going to be a problem.
No, I'm with you, and I am a big fan of the Alex Golish hire in general. Plus, when you look back to recent history under Hugh Freeze, Auburn's 1-12 in their last 13 one-score games.
Yep.
Golish has made a point about talking about how losing in those spots is a mentality thing that he is really trying to drive home in fall camp, and his team has had success with it. He turned USF from a one-win team to 7 his first year, closed out his tenure beating a couple of top 25 teams early in the season. He knows what he's doing as a coach, and I think he'll get the best out of a place that has been having the talent year after year, but not the on-field production and wins and losses.
Yep.
Okay, I got a fun one for you here. Call me crazy, but I don't want to eat dinner next to someone who's barefoot. And this is stemming from a comment here from Patriots receiver Mac Hollins, who we all know is grounding. But listen to this.
It's really great because now they're kind of letting me slide being barefoot in restaurants and stuff because they know who I am. You know, the first year, there's like some homeless guy coming in here, but now it's like that's the mechanic homeless guy, so it's all right. It's been great. Like having a packed out stadium, having loud fans, having them travel to games, that means something to the team in a big way.
I was just thinking about this, and if I were to go out to dinner somewhere, and I don't care who you are. I don't care that you're a receiver for the Patriots. You're not Drake May, by the way. Maybe if you were a star, I'd give you a little bit more leeway. But I don't want to sit down, eat a nice bowl of pasta, and then just see somebody's nasty, grimy, unwashed feet next to me. What are we doing?
I think you're doing this for the bit. I mean, you've eaten dinner next to barefoot people before.
What? In my house?
Yes.
My husband?
Sure.
I know where those feet have been.
Me? Justin? You had a pool party. A lot of people were barefoot and food was consumed.
It's very uncomfortable.
No, it was not. I just think the whole bit's weird. Like, what's the whole point? So he's grounded? Is that?
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean?
He's grounded to the earth.
Okay. Sure.
I don't know. Maybe, you know what? To go back to the SEC, maybe he needs to pull a note from the John Sumrall playbook and get pedicures every other week, and then I'd be a little bit more okay with it. How many times do you think he actually washes his feet in a day? Because those things have got to be rough.
I mean, to be grounded, you also can be clean. So I would assume he washes them quite a bit. I would hope.
I don't know.
At the very least.
You talk about doing this for the bit. I feel like it's performative.
Randy Rosarena, solo shot here so far. Kumar Rocker gives his first earned run up of the game. How about that?
Okay.
There's some controversy because I don't know if this was caught. No, it's not caught because they're reviewing whether or not it's a home run, but that's very clearly a home run. So Kumar Rocker gives up his first run of the game, 1-1 in this matchup.
Anything else you want to toss out last minute before we hit the break?
Say this. I was pleasantly surprised, again, with the thought of kind of going in with a blank slate on some of these teams. Tennessee's got a lot going for it on offense. I think the real question is just going to be at quarterback what that looks like for them because, you know, you're starting a true freshman, or the assumption is going to be that you're starting a true freshman in Faison Brandon. And so if he hits, there's some real potential. But I didn't really realize until I got into some of the write-ups how much they're really bringing back in terms of the skill positions. And their offensive line is going to be one of those that you're looking at potentially being a contender for the Joe Moore Award, which goes to the best offensive line in the country. One of the ways that I was going to put it for Call Me Crazy was they're good to see, they can make the CFP, kind of your line with the New Mexico bit, if their freshman quarterback hits.
That is a great reminder, though. JVT did a great job writing up the SEC and the Mountain West for our college football betting guide that is just a week away from reveal. If you want to get the guide and unlimited access to everything we do here at VSiN, head over to VSiN.com/subscribe. Last couple days for our football season special.